Welcome to A Meaningful Marketplace.
I'm Sarah Massoni from Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center, where I've helped countless dreamers launch their new food products. It's the science of taking a food delight from the kitchen to mass manufacturing and still keeping its great taste. That's what I do. I've been called the woman with the million-dollar palate, although I haven't tried to cash that check yet. Listen in weekly for real-life stories.
I'm Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce and author of Preservation Pantry, Modern Canning from Root to Top and Stem to Core. I love inspiring business owners to get started on their journeys, encouraging folks to be part of their local community, and I'm excited to help business owners tell their stories. Join us as we explore the journeys of women entrepreneurs in the food and beverage industry. The Northwest and Rocky Mountain Regional Food Business Center is the proud sponsor of the Meaningful Marketplace podcast, giving a voice to food from across the six-state region of Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. The Food Business Center supports Northwest and Rocky Mountain food industry makers as part of the USDA's National Network of Food Business Centers, supporting a more resilient, diverse, and competitive food system as a go-to source for small and mid-tier food and farm businesses with a focus on underserved communities. Providing education in the form of technical knowledge, business programs, and industry news. We sponsor trade shows, meetups, and conferences to connect growers, producers, retailers, distributors, and processors, all to stimulate business and raise the standards of our storied food industry. Join us as we travel through the six-state region learning more about food makers, food hubs, and food systems. Visit the website at northwestrockymountainregionalfoodbusinesses.com to get connected. Hello and welcome to Massoni and Marshall, the Meaningful Marketplace. We are here weekly to discuss the journeys of food entrepreneurs. We're glad you joined us today as we bring you stories of hope and inspiration. This is Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce.
And Sarah Massoni of Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center. Hi, Sarah Marshall.
Hi, Sarah Massoni. I am so excited today because we're doing something new.
It's so fun.
It's so fun. So over the past 4 years that we've had the podcast, we mostly are talking to people that we already know and people that are part of our city and our food scene. But today starts a new introduction to regional food businesses through the Regional Food Business Center. And we're going to be joined by a co-host, expert co-host from each region to talk about what's going on in their area.
Yes.
So today, we have Melissa Hemkin from Central Wyoming College. Welcome.
Thank you, Sarah Massoni and Sarah Marshall.
It's nice to have you here, Melissa. Thanks for joining the fun here on the podcast.
And Melissa, since this is your first time co-hosting with us, you're going to be with us for the next few weeks as our expert guide as we explore Wyoming. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do and who you are and what you're into?
Certainly. So I work for Central Wyoming College as the community food systems specialist. And as you all know, food touches everything. Everyone eats. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks have lots of thoughts and opinions about food and their favorite foods. But I primarily work in market infrastructure and sales channels and assisting food businesses, whether they are selling at the farmers markets or going wholesale with their food goals and what they may need to reach the next level.
Cool. And you also have something else you're going to tell us about, a new kitchen.
Oh, yes. So one of the things I work with in developing sales channels is here in Wyoming, we have a unique piece of legislation called the Wyoming Food Freedom Act that really helps local food makers get started. It's like a cottage food law. They can start in their own home kitchen and they can sell direct to consumer without inspection or licensure. And that's one of the ways that a lot of folks get started, because they get grandma's recipe and they start doing some little stuff. But a unique piece that's provided for that by that legislation is to have local food consignment stores. So a retail storefront can sell food products made in a home kitchen on consignment because it's still considered direct to consumer. Like raw milk can be sold that way as well. Wow. And raw milk products like kefir and yogurt similarly, because it's tracked by where the money goes, right? It always comes down to the money. And so a money from a customer buying a food product on consignment at a store has money going directly to that producer and maker. And so with that model, there's now quite a few local food consignment stores in Wyoming, and one just soft launched here in Lander, Wyoming, which is a town that I live outside of. It's called Metal Ark Market and Kitchen. And it's an old restaurant space on Main Street. So they also are opening a shared use kitchen in the back end of it to be for rent by private chefs as well as food businesses as both an incubator kitchen and a culinary food business education space. So last Friday was their first day open with regular hours, and they had some great response from the community, and they're excited to move forward. In Lander is a town of about 7,000 people. Previously, they've just had a summer farmers market on Saturday morning. So having this storefront available as a place to sell your food products really expands a business's sales channels, as well as provides space for the community members to purchase from these producers.
That's so cool. And you hosted a food corridor kitchen training in January, right? How many people came to that training and learned about starting shared use kitchens?
We had 23 people
attend.
That's
amazing.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, and they were from across the state. We had the food corridor workshop alongside the Wyoming Food Coalition Summit. So there was quite a few folks that gathered in Riverton, Wyoming for that 3-day conference.
And so what is the actual conference? Is it an annual conference that you have there in Wyoming?
It is, yes. There's a few other food and agriculture conferences that take place, but this was the Wyoming Food Coalition's annual summit. And they're focused on everything from food justice to food business to food production. And they really bring folks together just to talk about everything food in Wyoming. So it's a great place and group to be involved in to know what's going on around the state.
That's cool. And so you probably had school food service people, restaurateurs, food cart, food entrepreneurs, everyone Food Wyoming was at that meeting.
Yes, we had USDA Farm to School did a training about for producers who are wanting to sell into K-12 specifically with the USDA Farm to School program. And we also had a buyer growing networking event and had a panel of producers and buyers on that, and just an opportunity for folks to connect and network.
That's wonderful. The work you're doing is so important for Wyoming.
Yeah, we're all so excited to learn more about Wyoming and meet all the great people that you have brought along with you on this journey. So we do have a special guest here today. We're joined with Daniel Stewart, owner of High Country Mushrooms, crafting functional mushroom products for everyday lifestyles. Welcome, Daniel.
Hi, thank you for having me, Sarah. Hello, Sarah.
Hi.
We're so glad you're here today, and we really like to connect our listeners to you and your business. So can you tell us where we can find you on Instagram and online?
Certainly. Your followers can find my website, highcountryfungus.com, and that's a link to our online store. We'll be developing some more information about our products and some blog stuff too. And then Instagram is at High Country Fungus. Same with Facebook, High Country Fungus. And both are a little bit different from each other, but certainly mushroom-centric social media pages.
Perfect. That's so fun. I realize I introduced you by the wrong business. So I said High Country Mushrooms.
Mushrooms
are
fungus.
High Country Fungus. So let me just correct that right now so people can find you a little easier.
Thank you. Yeah. Happens all the time.
Okay.
And yeah, it's literally one word for another.
Perfect.
Well, what do they say? There's fungus among us?
Yes.
Well, we always like to hear about your journey into fungus and mushrooms. So tell us how you got started.
Certainly. I had no intention in the beginning. Probably started about 12 years ago. I was actually in college on a physics track, and I was taking a class on botany, and we had a fungi week, the life cycle of the fungus, and I don't remember any of the rest of the class except for that week. And at the time, I was at Washington State University, and I was right next door to a lot of great mushroom hunting grounds in Idaho. I was working at a restaurant, and so I just sort of started on the foraging route. I joined a mycological association, got some books, and started to learn different wild mushrooms. And that was a lot of fun. Did it for a number of years, brought mushrooms into the restaurants. And as that developed, I was interested in starting my own company. By this time, I had transitioned to Missoula, Montana, and started my first company there. It's a really long designation, Missoula Mushroom Company and Supply, LLC. I was interested in foraging and then also the supply side of cultivation. I think this was about 2019 when I started that company. Mm. And as I really started to ramp up about a year later, it was actually during the pandemic, kind of funny how it worked out for us. I incurred an accident while picking chanterelles, and I basically stepped in a big wasp's nest, and I was covered and blew up my knee when I was doing the runaway. And so it's funny how these junctions in time cause you to stop and think, and mm-hmm. And my business didn't survive that period of time. It was right at the beginning of the foraging season, and I needed surgery and stuff. And so about 6 months later, we had picked up and decided to move to Wyoming. We wanted to start our family, and my wife's from here in Riverton, which is like the center of the state. Mm. And we're kind of high mountain desert. And so I traded my rainforest for a totally different environment. And I was forced to switch from foraging to cultivation. Which was very exciting for me, and that's where I founded High Country Fungus LLC. That was April of 21, and I set out right away growing lion's mane and oyster mushrooms for the community.
Okay, so do you have like a barn or something that you grow in, or where are you doing this?
Using the garage as a facility, and then grow tents. So I ended up being kind of a seasonal operation. And
that was the first thing I was wondering, because, you know, here in the Pacific Northwest, we, you know, have mushroom foragers and mushrooms grow really well here. But as soon as I was thinking about Wyoming, I didn't know if you can forage for mushrooms there. Do they grow around? What's the mushroom growing season like there? Do they need to be cultivated?
They definitely grow around. I was so pleasantly surprised when I moved here. I didn't expect, and that's the story of mushrooms for me in the last decade, is I am always constantly surprised by something that happens with them next. And just sort of on happenstance, I went seeking mushrooms, and I kind of went into the wrong area, if you will, the wrong habitat. And my mentor said, no, you got to remember, you need to look for these trees. Okay, so I went back out and had a very exciting day discovering one of my favorites, the porcini. It can happen in the spring there in Oregon and in where I was in Idaho, but for us here in Wyoming, it's a summer mushroom. So as the monsoons kind of push up from the south and we get a lot of extra rain, it starts to pop around late August and then carries into September, depending on how short the season is. And that's something with Wyoming, you can never tell. You can have you can lose, you know, a whole month on each shoulder side to the extreme
weather.
Yeah, it can be quite
pleasant.
So you
said something really important. You talked about a mentor briefly. A lot of people can have mentors, but don't really realize that those folks could actually help you start a business and help you make decisions about your business. Can you just reflect on your mentor for a moment?
I can, and I can reflect on several mentors that I have.
Okay, good. That's a good lesson.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, if there's ever going to be a time in my life, I suppose if I'm the last one left or something, you know, like I always seek out mentorship. So on the identification side, I have made friends with a PhD mycologist, and he's an identification specialist. And he actually founded a mycological association in Montana. So this is the famous Mushroom Larry of Missoula, Montana. He's one of the resources that I'll reach out to. And just in the mushroom world, that's been one of the best ways, because I know a lot of people are looking towards apps and social media groups, and these things are constantly misidentifying. If you just get in with a group of people, you know, the association's $1 a month, I think, $5 for the premium, you know, they take you out to the woods. They show you what's good, what's not. You know, you have a lifelong connection with this group of people. You know, and so he's probably the most recent person I work with directly. But that's you know, that's identification of mushrooms. In the business world, I was connected with a mentor through a competition I did here a couple of years ago. To the University of Wyoming, and then some other entities here. So without a doubt, if I tried to set out and do all of this on my own, I'm sure I could get it done. It's just the time frame that shortens down to by not only having a mentor, but being teachable, by being open to what they're saying, because I didn't want to hear what my mentor was telling me for probably the first 9 months that we were working together. And I was just convinced, no, we have to do it this way. We have to do this way. And when it didn't work after two rounds of, you know, catastrophic failure, and am mm-hmm. I going to continue the business? You know, it finally clicks. And I think that's the story of where High Country Fungus is today. That click really happened when my son was born late May, and I had to take some time off and review things. And at that point, I was cultivating some mushrooms, but trying to beat the seasonality, looking for a facility, and just not having success. Whether we found a facility, and it literally in one case, the structure was had failed, and so some of the roof had collapsed.
I've heard that happening in Alaska too. Hey, Melissa, have you had to help a lot of businesses work through the seasonality in Wyoming? Because you have extreme weather in Wyoming.
Yeah, we have a really short growing season, and and it's very different because of our mountain ranges. So I'm down next to a river, and I have a 72-day growing season. Daniel's a little bit higher on a plateau where he lives. So he probably has mm-hmm. a higher growing season. And yeah, that is, especially when you're in food production, like growing fruits and vegetables and even livestock, the weather here does affect it. And it also affects transportation. We have a lot of mountain passes that become snowed in the winter, and trucks can't get it through. And so it makes it more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. And it sometimes is a disadvantage as well when you're competing nationally, especially when people are in different environments that may be more conducive to what they're doing as a food business, whether they're closest to a distribution hub where they can get products in cheaper and get their product out cheaper, or if they're, you know, cultivating mushrooms in the garage that's unheated.
Yeah.
For most of the year.
Frozen mushrooms.
Yeah. It definitely does come up as a challenge. And being creative, there's a lot of creativity here among all businesses to be situated here.
Yeah, I think one of the exciting things earlier this year, we were all at the Fancy Food Show And I want to ask Daniel about that experience because the people at the buyers that came to the show were excited to see products from Wyoming. Like, that was pretty cool. I don't think there's a lot of producers on a national level that are getting out there and presenting products that are artisanal and, you know, uniquely manufactured in Wyoming. So maybe Daniel can tell us a little bit about that after the break. Sorry, Sarah Marshall, I stole your break.
That's okay. Let's take a quick break and we can come back and talk more with Daniel about his high country fungus products. We'll be right back.
Oregon State University's College of Agricultural Sciences and the Food Innovation Center are proud sponsors of Meaningful Marketplace. With a mission to serve all Oregonians, we are committed to giving voice to those whose food and agricultural stories are not always heard. By providing access and opportunity for a more diverse and just food system, because food brings people together. Okay, Daniel, I just saw you were in the news this last week. I'm not sure if you follow yourself in the news, but your product made it to the What's New, What's Hot at the Fancy Food Show and was published again earlier this week. So tell us a little bit about your experience there in Las Vegas.
Fabulous Las Vegas. I didn't gamble and I won a ton. It was exciting to sort of put this whole concept together in a short time frame and have it so well received. I have not seen the most recent coverage that we have. I'll definitely be interested in finding that. We were successful sort of on two of the emerging trends right now in 24. So functional beverages are having a very exciting scene. And then all things mushroom. So it's the shroom boom.
And the shroom boom. That's good.
Yeah, so I'm very excited to be a part of the shroom boom right now. But the whole experience was I think everything I was hoping for and more, and really worked hard to get to. Being a part of the cohort really transformed my product to where I'd been, you know, to my vision board concept. And we started here the Food Freedom Act level, sort of that cottage level, which I'm so grateful for. And we got to incubate our concept. And I think that's one thing that people are going to be surprised about with Wyoming. They're going to see a lot of unique things. There's a lot here. And there's a lot of folks that are working with the resources that are here to develop new concepts and things that are emerging in I think, the market trends.
Daniel, you referred... You referred briefly to the competition that you won, by the way. It was the Fremont County Startup Challenge. You know, when you look back at, you know, winning that and also maybe, you know, the thoughts you had about your business at that time and maybe people's reactions to mushrooms at that time, how have you seen it changed over the last couple of years?
Yes, our competition here, that was the inaugural run of it. At the time, I was hyper focused on mushroom materials. And so I've developed a means to grow packaging for mushroom into an end user compostable replacement for styrofoam. Scaling that concept has been a challenge that we've been working on for about 2 years. And I think overall, the receipt of mushrooms here in the area has been so great. We have, and you know, I don't know, there's a few things that kind of prime the pump for me. There's a large agaricus farm about 25 miles outside of Riverton, and so folks here have had their own white button mushrooms and portobello mushrooms for a decade or more. You know, they're very familiar to locally grown mushrooms. And so that's kind of opened the concept. And then it was easy for me to bring in all of these new types of mushrooms, the oyster and the lion's mane. But the education part was really exciting when I started to point out, well, look, you guys have an oyster that grows on your trees here. So I could cultivate that and return it to the public. And but one thing that I found is not everybody wanted to have the fresh mushroom. You know, if not a lot of people know what to do with lion's mane. But everybody reads about the benefits, the cognition, and you know, the energy, and then with all of the other mushrooms that we're featuring in our beverages, there's a list of benefits, health benefits that go along with each one. So midsummer, we were asked, you know, can you make like a mushroom coffee or a cocoa or something? Can you do a beverage? Just every week at market, I kept getting that question. You know, finally, I was able to turn out like a mushroom cocoa, and then started working on a coffee. And both of those quickly overcame my fresh mushroom sales. And by September, I had to make that decision. Are we going to go forward with this one project, which I, you know, ironically, it was my one project I didn't want to let go of, the cultivation side. And my coach kept saying, you need to chop this one. You know, this one's not working the way you want. You know, so we made that pivot full time. And then we had the targets set up from the Food Business Innovation Center project, from the cohort, you know, getting to Las Vegas, what it would take to put my product in packaging and branding that I felt was that could be reached nationally and even globally. I've had my eye on some global markets and you know, with this concept. And so I worked not only with some local resources in marketing, but some exterior resources brought in. I've been so fortunate. Everything's been grant funded for us in order to accomplish these goals. But we've been able to really hone in that the concept. I developed a basic lineup. So I brought three items to Las Vegas. I do several other product things, but I chose kind of based off of what I thought was going to be easiest to sample with such a small area. And so everything was instant. So all I had to do was add hot water. and then I could spend the time talking and networking. And that worked out really well. It was a really good game plan. And so now we're sort of steamrolled with the post show activities and how to catch up.
Daniel, you mentioned briefly the market. I'm assuming you talk about the farmers market because I know you attended those for a couple of years. How did the customers that you met at the farmers markets, you know, in Riverton, it's also a small town, 10,000 people, you know, influence the value added mushroom products that you developed?
The clientele that we developed at our markets here in town, 100% influenced this product. I think some of it comes from just us, you know, in my home. I've been putting mushrooms in chocolate for a long time. So that was an easy one to start with for me. And then it just was like, okay, well, let's find the best chocolate I can. Because there's a lot of stuff in hot cocos in the mix, you know? And so I went through probably 20 different cocos to find what I wanted. And then it would also match, I think, what my clientele was looking for: wholesome ingredients, things they could pronounce, and just straightforward, you know, a minimum list of ingredients. And without that demographic, you know, because what I love about market is your clients or your regulars are going to be real honest with you about stuff. But they're going to show up. They're going to keep coming back, you know? And so they really helped me to be that test market as we were working through our recipes.
I think we're at like a perfect place to just describe, since our listeners can't see or taste your product. So let's describe how it would arrive to them if they were to order some of your products.
Yeah. So it's my philosophy that every mushroom is magical. Mm-hmm. So I've named our products the Magic Line. So we have Magic Cocoa, we have Magic Chai, we have Magic Coffee, and I do a Magic Mocha. This is a no sugar added non-dairy mix. It's a 30-day supply. And right now we have stand-up pouch packaging for these products, and then your sort of traditional side gusseted flat bottom coffee bag. We will be experiencing some brand transition in the packaging as we grow to meet the demand of some of the buyers that we met. But for now, this is where the Magic Line is. Our chai is sweet, creamy, delicious. The interesting part about the umami of the mushroom is that it is definitely enhanced with what it's mixed with. And so there's some sweetness that I find in the lion's mane and the cordyceps that are really pulled out into the chai. But then the depth of like reishi and chaga, I connect with more in the cocoa. The coffee, what I love most about it is it really balances the acidity of coffee. And so it's a very smooth coffee forward drink with our mushroom extract.
And do you grow the mushrooms that you're using in your product, or is that where you had to move from being a cultivator into using a different product?
I definitely had to transition that.
Yeah.
We also use the mushroom extract so that it's more bioavailable. We want our customers to have as much of the beta glucans that are available in mushrooms in our product. And so I definitely had to do quite a bit of research to find my supplier. And the thing is too, with like chaga, it only grows in a birch forest, and it can grow on a couple other things, but it mostly only grows in a birch forest. And so some of these are difficult to get to. Right, Northeast United States is primarily where that is, and then up into Canada, Minnesota, Russia, China. Yeah, mm-hmm. Some of the border states of Canada, you can find chaga growing in the U.S. And there are a couple of people trying to inoculate their own birch forests for that, but you can't grow it in a farm.
I grew up in Minnesota, and those mushrooms were on all the birch trees, and we used to pick them and draw pictures on them, not eat them. So, I think I have an old one from my childhood. Maybe I'll dig it out and grind it up and see how it tastes.
But you would ruin your artwork, though.
Yeah, I can cut that part.
Yeah.
Funny.
Well, I know that you set out to do one thing, and your journey has led you to something else. But Melissa, I'm sure you see this a lot too with makers, in that when you first start out, especially in your home kitchen, it's pretty easy to grow your own stuff and make a few things that you sell at market. But as you start to grow, and especially if you're looking into doing wholesale, it almost, unless you have a huge farm and you're a farmer already, it's almost impossible to do that. So I think people probably need help with sourcing and connecting to natural ingredients. And I know sometimes people come through the food shows that can offer that kind of service. But do you have a way to connect people to ingredient suppliers in the area, Melissa?
We work quite a bit with the statewide Eat Wyoming Local Food Hub to assist with that. So there are bread baskets of Wyoming that have more favorable climate for growing crops. And there are some larger producers that are providing some of that ingredient sourcing. But beyond that, that is one of the main challenges when you get to recipes and you're looking for ingredients for it, because we also don't have a lot of chain grocery stores here. We're very rural. Wyoming has 500,000 people in the entire state. So Wyoming is the most sparsely, least populated, most sparsely populated, I think is how it gets classed. Like we have the fewest people and we're spread out the most is basically what it means. And so Salt Lake, Billings, Denver are the urban areas that things have to be sourced from. So shipping definitely can be higher. And that's one of the challenges of being based in Wyoming that companies have to take into consideration and perhaps be creative in collaborating and bringing in ingredients or having someone grow it here if it is possible to be grown here.
Hey, Daniel, I wanted to ask, do you have any food science questions for me that I can help answer here today?
Yeah, I've definitely been exposed to the food science world now in a whole new light.
I guess I'd just say for a dried product, we'd be looking at water activity. So we just want to make sure that we didn't have more than probably 8 to 9% available moisture in your product. That would be one tip for a dry drink. And the water activity I'm imagining is like below 0.5. So it's very low risk food product. Probably would be considered non-ready to eat because you have to add it to maybe a hot liquid to hydrate everything. That's how I would think about it.
Yeah, in the evolution of the product and in some of our new containers, we're also going to be including a desiccant pack to ensure that longevity.
That's a good idea.
And yeah, that one came to me from the help that I'm seeking. So I was actually really glad to hear that. I hadn't really thought about that. But yeah, it certainly is. I think one of the biggest challenges transitioning from a cottage rule concept into into this larger industry of CPG, you know, especially here in Wyoming. What we have here really makes sense for our communities, but there's been a bit of a learning curve to get my product ready to cross the state line.
And that's one thing. Excuse me. And that's one thing I do help a lot of food and agriculture businesses with, is it's so easy to test things underneath the Wyoming Food Freedom Act, and they get excited, and then they get a lot of customer demand, and then they look at scaling up, and then they realize, oh, there's a lot more out there for USDA and FDA regulations that they need to learn. And then I see the most committed and dedicated, enthusiastic folks going, yes, I'm going to cross that threshold and move on. And other people just go, nope, farmers markets and food freedom, direct to consumer, I'm just going to stay here. And that's totally great too. That's part of their choice is where they want their business to go.
That's very true.
It's interesting to hear the differences, because we have a cottage license here too that people can get, but then the real big thing that I'm hearing that's different is that if those people have that specific license, then they can't without getting a Department of Agriculture inspector and then FDA inspecting, you can't sell wholesale. So we don't have any outlets that you could sell at other than selling it direct to customer at a farmer's market. But then even the farmer's markets here have rules that 75% of your product has to be, grown or manufactured locally. And so, it sounds like probably your farmers markets wouldn't have that rule because you need to outsource from other places because there's not a lot that you can get locally. So it's cool that the
consignment
the rules there, are adaptable.
That's cool.
And it seems like you could start a business with a little bit less risk. As far as financially going, because that's the thing that gets hard. If you move into here having to do wholesale, then you really have to start generating a lot of product. So you usually grow out of your home very quickly, where that might not be the case there.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, now that you've taken your product into the national spotlight, what's your next move?
We are focused on New York. I'm excited to be joining you all along the journey and getting the little tweaks that came to us at the Las Vegas show dialed in. Mm-hmm. That was so huge. There were some honest marketing people and I had a lot of great conversations. Again, being open to that change and stuff has really helped. So we'll have our products ready to stand out a little bit more, and then hopefully we'll be able to capture some more contracts, some more buyers a little bit quicker. I have at that first round show in Las Vegas provided me with so many parts of my supply chain issues that now my main goal in New York is to do this all again, but be ready and grow from there. I'm going to add, I think, two more shows in 25. I'm probably going to stay committed with the SFA, and it's really exciting. It's where I've been wanting to be since I started. I would say even just started my own companies. I mean, it's probably been about 6 years now, but I really have been trying to get High Country Fungus here since April of 21.
And one of those
congratulations.
Yeah. One of those supply chain challenges that Daniel mentioned is here in Wyoming, we don't have any co-packing facility for any type of food product. And so I had some conversation with Daniel before the Fancy Food Show going, oh, how can we build one in Wyoming? And mm-hmm. Daniel builds one. Who else can use the equipment? Because that's a lot of investment. Yes. And thankfully, through going to the Las Vegas show, Daniel was able to connect with someone who's outside of state that could be his co-packer. I still think Wyoming needs a co-packer. That's probably going to land on my to-do list as a food system person, and get some more grant funding in and hopefully help food businesses have one that's a little more local.
We've definitely been talking. This has come up in a couple of different circles. I've had meetings with the Wyoming Business Council, and so I do keep bringing this up, because even if we put one in Cheyenne or something that makes sense for our state, again, there's a lot that is here to offer. There's a lot of producers just waiting to have that next level, that piece. And so it's exciting.
You know who has kind of figured out is Mission Mountain in Montana. In Ronan, they bought a huge building and repurposed it to being a shared use and manufacturing hub. They even have USDA manufacturing there. And so that's totally doable, I think. Just have to have people who are interested, who want to get it started, who have longevity of vision. So you have to have somebody who's really vested in the idea and like stick with it for multiple years to get it going. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Daniel, we want to make sure to send customers to you directly. So if people want to order your products, where do they go?
The website, highcountryfungus.com. Should lead you straight into our number one product right now, the mushroom mocha. Although it's being challenged with the chai. The chai is pretty tasty.
Perfect. Well, we will send people your way and link you to them. I want to thank everybody for joining today. It's so great to hear about other regions, and I can't wait to hear more about Wyoming and meet new people. Melissa, I'm so excited to get to know you better and have you co-host with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for hosting.
We record Missoni and Marshall live every week. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform like iTunes. Thank you to our audio engineer, Alon, and our production assistant, Chelsea. If you want to be a guest on the show, you can send us a DM on our Instagram, Missoni and Marshall. And we will be back next week, everybody. Thanks for joining. Bye.
Bye for now.
You're listening to the Startup Radio Network. Listen, learn, launch. 10% of our gross revenue goes directly to women entrepreneurs in developing countries around the world through Kiva's microfinance program.